Welcome to the Nestorius Public Radio Show. I'm your host, Nestor Rodriguez, a.k.a.
Flaco.
That's my co-host, my substitute co-host, because Simon Kaufman, my usual, who would probably do something like, yo, Nestorius, the warm fuzzy, who was he, jizzy, don't stop, the busy, he's not here today, so... I got my man Sal Rodriguez. What's up, baby?
What's up, man? You know, it's so good to be here, but also so strange. You know, coming back to Skid Row, I haven't been here in about 9 months, I think. It's kind of like when you break up with a girlfriend, and then later on you see her, and she looks better. She's slimmer. She's hotter. She's got a better job.
They're talking about Jeremy. Jeremy lost a lot of weight.
I come back. Jeremy looks happy. He looks slim.
Yeah.
This studio is sexy.
Jeremy's changed his whole outlook on life since he's been
Go to Tony Robbins seminar
that's another episode. Anyway, yo,
this place is awesome, especially at night. I've never been here at night before, and this place is damn sexy.
It is sexy, yeah. And to your right is none other than my boy Mike Hogan. What's up, baby?
I'm fine.
This is Mike's first time on an internet radio show. He's a good friend of mine. Yeah. He and I fight crime together. He's my sidekick. He's Black Man, and I'm Robin. And we usually go out at night, and we try to combat the evils of Gotham.
I've seen the way you guys operate together. Nestor, you're a damn backseat driver. That's what you are. He is the most backseat driver, really. Because I've driven with Nestor in my car. I'm driving, and he's passenger. Uh-huh. He's the worst.
Yeah. I'm the worst backseat driver, because I'm in the front seat.
Because
if you want to be a good backseat driver, you should be in the backseat.
You're a backseat driver who's worse because you're in the passenger seat.
Right.
Passenger seat driver.
Well,
given the Bronx kind of directions.
Well, I got to
in LA.
But you got to preface that by understanding that Mike, he'll get in the car without knowing where the fuck he's going, and he's driving. And he's driving aimlessly. See, I'm of the school of thought, before I get in the car, I know where I'm going.
Nestor uses expressions like this is Manhattan. He's like, we're like, where do we go? He goes, oh, go uptown. What do you mean uptown? This is LA. Right. There's no damn uptown here.
I don't know who the fuck you've been hanging out with, but Nestor does not say that. Yeah. Nestor does not say uptown in the LA. Sorry. Wrong. You got the wrong Negro. Straight up.
You don't say upstate.
No.
Hey, you're going to San Francisco. You're going upstate?
No. Got the wrong one. Hey, yo, so it's Halloween. No, seriously. Before we move forward, if you're listening live, okay, if you're at home, you haven't done your laundry, you haven't eaten anything that's fresh in about 2 weeks, call 1-800-893-9562. We're here for you. We love you.
I was listening to the show about a few months ago, and you said on the air, you said, I see you out there sitting there naked listening to the show. And I literally at the time was naked listening to the show. I was like, how do they know that?
Because I know. We have 5 live listeners. 3 of them have dirty underwear. They're naked. They only have fucking spoiled rice milk in the fridge. I know this, dude. I know my demographics. Trust me. So, it's Halloween. Not my favorite holiday. It's interesting. You know what I mean? It's an interesting, phenomenon.
Wait. What is your favorite holiday?
Fourth of July.
What?
Yeah. Fourth of July, Memorial Day.
Nobody's favorite holiday is Fourth of July.
Well, he gets the barbecue on Fourth of July.
Well, no one's favorite. Jeremy's favorite holiday is fucking Fourth of July. Right, Jeremy?
I'm a New Year's guy, actually.
Okay. I know, because you're about making resolutions and shit, right?
What are you talking about? Well, he's about getting fucked up. He doesn't. Yeah. Nobody cares about.
Well, that's why 4th of July.
4th of July.
That's why 4th of July is my favorite. What better time of the year to get fucked up? You're in your fucking Bermuda shorts. It's summertime. You're at the beach. Chicks are naked. There's burgers on the grill. Beers are flowing. All sorts of shit. I mean, come on, dude. Think about it. And if you're in New York, New Year's Eve is fucking freezing. Okay. Think about it.
Where are burgers on the grill and women are naked? Where's that?
At the beach. At the beach in New York. Orchard Beach. Look it up.
I will. I'm going to Google Orchard Beach because I want to
Orchard Beach. Orchard Beach in the South Bronx, where all the Puerto Ricans hang out. Speaking of Puerto Ricans, we're going to go right into our first article. I'm going to dedicate today's show to deaths. Since Halloween really stems from All Souls Day or Day of the Dead for us Latinos, Mexicans actually, because Puerto Ricans.
Why are you looking at me?
Well, because you're Mexican, because you're Mexican descent, dressed up as a convict.
Can I just say
conveniently?
This? Can I just say this that. In the spirit of Halloween, you know, with the price of razor blades today, I wouldn't mind some of those in the candy. I'll tell you that much.
I hear you.
Yeah, those things are damn expensive.
Right. If you want to give me free razor blades, Mach 3. Put some in my motherfucking apples anytime. Okay? Yeah. To Chipotle on 7th Street and Grand Avenue in downtown L.A. Beat the fuck up. They hooked us up with $3 burritos.
Yeah, it was great.
That was awesome, right?
It was great.
If you were in a costume, they gave you your burrito for half price. Actually, that's better than half price.
Right. For those of you that don't know, this is an ongoing thing with Chipotle. From 4 p.m. to closing at any Chipotle, they'll give you any burrito for $3 if you're in costume. Of course, none of us were in costume except for you. Mike, I told the guy, his costume is he's dressed as a black man because he's really white. The guy gave him a burrito.
Well, otherwise the NAACP would have been all over.
Right. I basically told him, I'm dressed as a stockbroker because I have my computer bag. I said, normally I'm a Puerto Rican and I'm unemployed. They gave me a burrito. And you came along and you had your fucking...
A shaved head and a convict shirt.
And conquering fucking state penitentiary shirt.
And my knife.
And your knife. To the first story, Puerto Rican. So the first death, rest in peace, to, for those of you guys that don't know, Scott Carpenter, he appears white. I mean, in most news clippings, you know, everyone thinks he's a white guy.
Well, there's only been like two non-white astronauts, right? There's been like one Asian guy and like two black guys?
I'm not sure.
No.
No?
There's never been a black guy in space.
Yeah, there was one
in space, but they ain't done nothing. They just went for the ride.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hold on a second. There was a black dude in space?
Two
really?
Of them. Yeah, there's a couple of them.
Man, I've been asleep.
They just went for the ride.
Anyway, this dude was the second American to orbit the Earth. Not to go to the moon, but to orbit the Earth.
Okay.
And so, you know, I mean... I believe John Glenn was the first, right, to orbit the Earth.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so he just passed. Scott Carpenter, rest in peace. I'm going to read about him because a lot of people, I didn't know who he was. A lot of people don't know who he is. Probably some of these kids nowadays don't even know who the fuck anybody is anymore. The article is The Astronaut Who Sought Immortality. So it goes, when Scott Carpenter's capsule splashed down in the Caribbean on May 24th, 1962, NASA didn't know if the astronaut was alive or dead. The craft had been on low fuel as it reentered the atmosphere, and a key instrument that indicated which way the capsule was pointing had malfunctioned. NASA's mission control told Carpenter he would overshoot his landing zone by more than 250 miles and then abruptly lost radio contact. Veteran broadcaster Walter Cronkite solemnly reported on CBS News that America may have lost an astronaut. But as it turned out, there was no need for panic. Carpenter, always cool under pressure, his heart rate never went above 105 during his almost five-hour space flight.
Wait, hang on. For the young people, Walter Cronkite was like that era's Mario Lopez.
His heart rate never went above 105 during his almost five-hour space flight. Had he taken manual control of the craft and landed safely in the waters of Puerto Rico.
Big up, big up,
big the fuck up. So this is the first inkling that this dude wasn't white. Okay, I'm going to read on so you know what I'm talking about. When a Navy helicopter spotted him, he had his feet up in a life raft and was eating a candy bar. Bing, 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 bing. That's another fucking clear-cut sign right there. The man just didn't give a fuck. Whisked aboard the aircraft carrier Intrepid, which, by the way, a side note, the Intrepid Sea and Air Museum is parked in New York City, on the west side of 42nd Street. So if you want to know where this guy was taken, Intrepid is actually docked on the far west side of New York City off of 42nd Street.
And then they named the Dodge Intrepid after this, right?
I don't know about all that. I don't know. Anyway,
that sounds good.
Carpenter received a phone call from President Kennedy, who congratulated him on being the second American to orbit Earth. The astronaut humbly apologized for not having aimed a little bit better on reentry.
Wait, hang on. For the young people listening, Kennedy was like that era's Obama.
White.
But white.
Yeah, yeah. Except Kennedy got laid. A lot. A lot.
You don't think Obama gets laid?
Michelle will fuck him up. No. Barack gets laid.
How do you know Barack gets laid?
He gets laid with a gorgeous woman. His wife is gorgeous. I mean, he gets laid.
To us, maybe she's gorgeous. Maybe he's bored of her.
I've met her. She's fucking gorgeous, dude.
Oh, that's right.
Trust me.
You've met her.
She's gorgeous.
Down there is a picture somewhere of you
she's
with
gorgeous,
Michelle Obama.
She's gorgeous, dude. I don't give a shit. He's getting laid.
Have you seen her moving a dress?
No. She's don't say anything. Be careful what you say about Michelle Obama, because Nestor is down with her.
No, Michelle, she's flawless. I'm serious. I'm not even making that up. She's flawless. So he's getting laid. He's just not getting a variety of rainbow colors and flavors like JFK.
I will say that Michelle is very attractive, but she's a big woman. I mean, you'd have to
she's a tall woman.
You'd have
to
be a big man. I couldn't handle her. I don't think I can handle her.
No, she's tall, dude.
Yeah,
she's very tall. I hugged her, and her fucking shoulders were like just slightly below my ears.
Yeah.
She's tall.
I couldn't handle her.
Picture that, guys. Her shoulders were slightly below my ears.
What was you doing?
Wow.
Just giving her a hug. Shall I continue?
Yes, you
All
shall.
Right. Carpenter flew anti-submarine patrols and surveillance sorties during the Korean War, said Bloomberg.com. And in the late 1950s, he applied for Project Mercury, the first U.S. human spacecraft program. I volunteered for this program for a lot of reasons, he said, after being selected along with six other pilots in 1959. One of them, quite frankly, is that it is a chance for immortality. Carpenter uttered the famous line, "Godspeed, John Glenn," when astronaut Glenn became the first American to orbit Earth on February 20th, 1962. 3 months after that, it was Carpenter's turn. He blasted off from Cape Canaveral, Florida, raced to an altitude of 165 miles, and circled the planet at 17,500 miles per hour, said the Washington Post. He was enjoying himself. Author Tom Wolfe wrote in The Right Stuff his account of the Mercury Project. He talked more and more. He talked more, ate more, drank more water, and did more with the capsule than any of them ever had. He was swinging the capsule this way and that way, taking photographs a mile a minute, making detailed observations of the sunrises and horizon. While his reentry was troubled, a NASA investigation officially exonerated him of any pilot error. But Mercury flight director Chris Kraft insisted that Carpenter's lack of discipline, another reason why I think he's Puerto Rican, lack of discipline had caused the overshoot. He was completely ignoring our request to check his instruments. Kraft wrote in his 2001 memoir, "I swore an oath that Scott Carpenter would never fly again in space." He didn't. That right there tells me the dude was Puerto Rican. He just didn't give a shit. He didn't follow directions. He just did. He just did his own thing. But amazing man. Amazing man. We'll read on. First of all, you got to understand.
But think about this. Everything he did in that craft from that point on became standard.
Right.
That these guys, he was the guinea pig.
Mm-hmm.
He self-appointed guinea pig.
Those flights were solo.
Right.
Not like these homo flights now. You get like four or five guys, you play cards in the fucking, you know, in the atmosphere. These guys are solo. Imagine that shit going up by yourself.
Right.
You don't give a shit.
Well, I even though I'm heterosexual, I might choose the homo flight, because if you're on the solo flight, you're going to have to masturbate.
Well, and then when you ejaculate, that shit's going to splatter you in the fucking head, because gravitational force is going to float, and you're apt to fucking lick it.
What happens when you come in space? When you come in space, the sperms just float all over the room.
Because he had to bring up the jerk off. Before your astronomical bomber clad masturbatory motherfucker. Anyway, let me finish this article and then we can fuck around, because this is just one more paragraph. Having done what he could in outer space, Carpenter became a pioneer in the ocean's depths, said the New York Times. He descended 200 feet to the ocean floor off San Diego in 1965 to inaugurate the Navy's Man in the Sea program by living in an undersea habitat called Sea Lab 2. Together with three other men, Sal.
Yes.
He stayed for 30 days.
This is the gay ocean voyage.
Yeah, right.
He stayed for 30 days mining ore from the ocean floor. 30 days, dude. Harvesting fish and even salvaging a sunken fighter jet. After retiring from the Navy in 1969, Carpenter continued seeking new adventures. He set up a company devoted to oceanographic research and dived in most of the world's oceans, including under the Arctic ice. Every child has got to seek his own destiny, he said. All I can say is that I have had a great time seeking my own.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Big up, big up.
Big up.
Big up! Big the fuck up for you crazy, high-rising, achieving motherfuckers.
Come on, Paul.
Yeah. Anyway, on another note, we got some scary shit happening. We got the sriracha, the famous hot red spicy sauce. There's a big problem going on right now. This is very scary for a lot of people. A lot of people can't live without this shit. The factory used to be in Rosemead in California, and then they opened up another factory in Irwindale. Not a factory, a warehouse, right?
I thought it was a factory in Irwindale.
Okay, a factory in Irwindale. So they opened up a factory in Irwindale. The one in Rosemead was a big warehouse and factory. And apparently, all the neighbors or people who live in the neighborhood around the factory have been complaining of the fumes, the hot pepper fumes in the air, and that their eyes are burning and the smell.
Yeah. Well, because most people like their oxygen mild, but there are a few people that like their oxygen spicy.
Right. Yeah, definitely. The odors are so strong and offensive as to have caused residents to move outdoor activities indoors and even vacate their residences temporarily to seek relief from the odors, the suit says. So they're trying to, follow suit. And they filed a suit with the local authorities. And the funny thing about it is that the general manager of the place, what did he say? he said something to the effect of, he said, nobody in the factory is complaining. Yeah,
none of my employees has complained about this.
That's what people come to my apartment and they go, this apartment smells like cat pee. And I go, no one else is complaining about it but you. So I figure they must be the crazy ones.
Yeah. Well, somebody commented below. It says the racial makeup of Irwindale, I mean, this is not surprising, was 58.6% white, 0.8% African American, 20.2% Native American, 2.4% Asian. Anyway, point is the majority of white.
22% of the population?
No. 2.4%
was Native American.
Native American. Okay. 0.6% was Asian. Okay. They have the numbers. It says the racial makeup of Irwindale was 833 people are white.
It was interfering with the fumes from the race cars in Irwindale.
Well,
that's true. There is a racetrack over there.
If you can't smell the aroma
of the exhaust,
yeah.
Are you implying that white people are more apt to complain about the
In general, I think white people are more apt to complain, period.
Yes.
Especially if they can't smell their exhaust.
No, no, no. no, in general. Well, what you're saying, Mike, is that in Irwindale, there's a lot of race car.
There's a big racetrack.
Racetrack. Yeah. But apparently, what happened is in Rosemead, the factory was nowhere. It was near an industrial complex. Mm-hmm. Whereas here, there happened to be some housing developments relatively close. So that's a different issue. The other thing that's interesting is, I can't find the quote, but there's a guy who said... who says something to the effect of, well, it's not that bad inside once you get used to it. And basically, the guy who says it is a Latino. He works in there.
Well, he used to work at the Cholula factory, so it wasn't nothing for him.
Yeah. My man gargles with fucking sriracha sauce. He fucking, his eyes get dry. He fucking squirts sriracha sauce in his eye. He needs lubrication to have sex with his fucking dog. He uses sriracha sauce. Come on, dude. It was just fucking hilarious. I just thought that was funny.
Who would win in a fight, sriracha sauce or Tapatio hot sauce?
Well, Tapatio sucks as far as I'm concerned. Yes.
What?
I'm a Cholula fan. And if you go and you can't compare either Tapatio, Cholula, or sriracha.
So sriracha.
You can't compare those because sriracha is a completely different animal onto itself.
It is. There's a rooster on the cover of it.
Well, there's a rooster, yeah. But the thing that, you know, for those of you that want to know about sriracha, everybody knows about it. It's a fucking red bottle with a green cap and a white rooster. It's white lettering. It's an interesting story. You should Google it. The guy's from Vietnam. He came to this country, I think, in the 70s, and he used to make hot sauce for his village. And when he came here, he was making the hot sauce for his family and neighbors. And, you know, the shit caught on. Everybody loved it. He couldn't make enough of it. He decided to open up a place and boom, the rest is history. What's interesting about sriracha is that it's in every fucking supermarket. This one, you know, when you have something that's really good or that it's, you know, crossed over into many different cultures. I mean, people use it in sushi. You got all these gourmand chefs making all sorts of shit. It's almost impossible not to think of a way to use sriracha. I mean, it's interesting. It's hot, but it's got a very tangy, vinegary flavor. So it's not like a really dense salsa type of hot sauce.
You can also use it to shine your copper pots. I understand.
You can. Yes. You can. Yeah. Yeah.
If you
can.
You want to have a hot time at night, you can use it for sexual.
That's an African American thing, you know what I mean? Yeah, us
like
Latinos,
like
So, I don't know about that, Mike, but if you say so, then no problemo. So we have there's some crazy shit that's been going on, man. We have a another story of a former funeral home employee charged with jacking gold crowns from corpses.
If I'm not mistaken, the article actually uses the expression jacking.
Right, what, exactly.
Where did this guy get his journalism degree from? Def Jam University?
Where does he get his colloquialism and shit? Well, I guess it's like you know, I'm a jack your shit. Carjacking. This is crown jacking. The picture is of a skull with gold teeth. So maybe Jack O'Lantern, like Jack, I don't know, maybe he was trying to something. But
or maybe he was using a jackhammer.
Oh yeah, or maybe he was just jacking off on the fucking corpses. Who knows?
Why do I have a belief that if your teeth look like that, you didn't die of natural causes? I'd be willing to bet money.
No, if your teeth look like that, you are a rich son of a bitch.
If you wanna see the picture that we're looking at, go to LAIST.com. That's where I get a lot of my local Los Angeles news. It's pretty interesting stuff. Some of it is very interesting. Some of it is informative. Some of it is cultural. Some of it is gastronomical. I'm into food.
It is cultural because the guy who did it was Puerto Rican.
No, the guy who did this was... No, he wasn't Puerto Rican, was he?
He's a white dude.
He's a white dude. Was he white?
No, I just wanted
you guys out there to know that we're racist here. We want to know what race this motherfucker was so that we can poke fun at him.
That's relevant.
It's relevant. So, check this out. A former apprentice embalmer, okay, accused of taking gold crowns from corpses at a Lancaster funeral home will be arraigned Wednesday on more than two dozen felony counts, the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office announced. Pete Jacob Lara, 39, is charged with removal of possession of dental gold from human remains, amongst other felonies. He also faces 23 counts of second-degree commercial burglary. Lara now, formerly...
Wait a minute. Commercial burglary?
Yeah.
What's that?
We'll have to Google that in a minute.
It's when you do a burglary within 30 seconds of a commercial.
Right.
Yeah, you have to do it within the commercial.
Like if you're watching a commercial on your iPhone and you decide to break into some place, that's called a commercial burglary.
So what was he burglarizing?
I don't know. I think the main point of the story is that he's jacking gold crowns from cadavers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he was burglarizing their heads.
Well, he's also doing something else. But they also said among other felonies, like I said, he might be jacking off on the corpses. Yeah. You know what I mean?
While
that's a felony.
Why he's burglarizing the heads.
Lara formerly worked for Haley Olson Murphy Funeral Home in Lancaster as an apprentice embalmer. He allegedly took gold crowns from bodies and other items like a cremation urn box and medallions used to decorate urn boxes worth more than $1,000. Prosecutor said Lara went on to pawn the stolen goods at pawn shops and jewelry exchanges. The alleged crimes took place between June and October. His case is still being investigated by the L.A. County Sheriff's Department. If convicted, Lara faces a maximum sentence of 19 years in state prison. He should fucking get 19 years.
Now think,
scumbag.
You're the guy that...
You were asking me.
Well, I just want to know...
How did they catch him?
Well, yeah, because I'm curious...
Well, because the stupid fuck probably went to his local pawn shop with actual crowns of gold.
And you think his homie in the that he's been paying him said, what's this, brother, motif?
Well, eventually, you know... I mean, how many times could you go into a fucking pawn shop with... crowns. Eventually, someone might, you know, notify the authorities.
I'd like to see that on an episode of Pawn Stars when somebody brings in two and Chum Lee's.
Yeah. What do you want to do with that, son? You want to sell it or you want to pawn it?
How much you want for it?
I don't know. That's one of my favorite shows.
Nobody ever wants to pawn it.
Well, I've watched a couple episodes of that when they actually, two guys pawn. One guy pawned a large collection of, I don't know what I forget what it was, but for a nice $20,000, something like that. Yeah, it's crazy.
You know the only thing I don't like about that show or any show where they're always...
You've told me this.
It never shows them selling the stuff. It only shows them buying the stuff. Does anybody ever buy the stuff from them?
Same thing with Storage Wars. I don't think so. But I've been to the gold and silver pawn shop in Las Vegas. Yeah, it's an interesting place.
Did you see the actors?
No. I mean, I like the old man, so, you know, I haven't seen... I would have liked to have seen the old man, but, you know.
You don't like the Michael Chiklis-looking guy?
Rick?
Yeah.
I do like Rick.
Yeah.
Rick is very knowledgeable. What's interesting about that show and it being on the History Channel is that the medium... For the information is pawns, people pawning items and stuff like that. But a lot of that stuff has historical content, and you wind up learning a lot about, you know, crazy stuff. Some of it is stupid, but you learn shit. It's interesting.
I like the roadshow better.
I got you. The Antiques Roadshow.
That's
all right. I mean, I just got tired of looking at shit that I would never be able to afford, so I said, fuck it. I'm going to watch Pawn Stars.
It's where you can pawn your teeth.
Yeah. So we're going to continue with just basically, you know, death and scary shit. I'm going to go with a husband and wife in their 70s were charged this week with murdering their previous spouses and two children more than 30 years ago. They then married each other and moved 1,100 miles away. Prosecutors allege that Alice Uden, 74, killed her husband, Ronald Hultz, in late 1974, probably for bad last names, right?
Mm-hmm. What's the last name?
Hultz and Uden.
Those suck.
Yeah, in late 1974 or early 1975. And that 5 years later, Gerald Uden, 71, shot dead his ex-wife, Virginia, and two adopted sons, ages 10 and 12, on a bird hunting trip and then hid the bodies. Okay.
Nah, bird hunting. Yeah, they must be related to what's that vice president?
Dick Cheney. Well, yeah. The guy looks a little bit like Cheney. Yeah. The arrest came after police found Holtz's body in an abandoned mine in Wyoming, where the Udens lived before relocating to Missouri. Much about the case remains murky, including whether the two knew about each other's alleged crimes when they got together. In other words, they each murdered their respective spouses separately 3 years apart, and then they got together. Then they got married.
Wait, I'm looking at the pictures. Yeah. These are the living...
Those are the dead bodies. No, those are them. They look
the
dead.
Couple. Now, think about this.
Hold on.
Do you think if he... Now, how much different did she look 7 years ago?
I bet you she didn't look that much better.
So, I think I would have shot her 70 years ago. Because if that's her now, man.
Yeah.
That's a costume.
Anyway, that's at the you can Google this. The elderly killers arrested in Chadwick, Missouri. Anyway, is this, you know, we're going to continue with.
How did they get caught?
I think what happened was,
because the way he looks, he looked like he turned himself in to get away from her.
Well. I don't know how they got caught, to be honest with you. I think that maybe a neighbor said that the couple had lived on about 60 acres near Missouri's Mark Twain National Forest for at least 15 years with several of their adult children. Basically, they found the body of one of their spouses, and since they lived there, they wanted to know, like, you know, they probably wanted to find out, like,
what happened?
Did you know that your husband was there all along? Shit like that.
You know, I've seen enough of these true TV and court TV shows to know that you can get away with killing someone as long as you never tell anyone.
Right.
And usually someone will tell somebody. Yes. They'll tell their best friend in confidence. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And that is a mistake.
Yes.
Don't tell. Well, if you kill somebody, listeners, if you kill anybody, do not tell anyone.
Yeah. Well, what it is, it's almost like.
Or whatever you do, don't marry a crime partner that looks like her.
And don't Facebook status update that you killed someone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, that's an ongoing...
Like, oh, bodies sure are heavy.
That's an...
Frowny face.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's an ongoing thing. That's an ongoing thing that Simon and I have. He doesn't believe that Facebook postings should hold or should be used as evidence in a court of law. And I'm like... And his thing is like, well, somebody can hack into your account and post stupid, you know, stuff like that. And I'm like, the majority of these people who are posting stuff are just plain old fucking retarded bastards. They do stupid shit.
Nobody had to hack into their account.
No one has to hack into their account. And the thing is that people are stupid. There's two things that'll get you caught. One of those is guilt, right? So you do this and let's face it, if you have some sort of a conscience, you know, you're going to feel guilty about murdering somebody. You're just going to. It's the normal thing to do. If you're a sociopath, trust me, you don't have friends to tell them about anything you've done. And you're not going to feel guilt. So it's not going to matter. It's always the people who, you know, who do shit and then they think that they can, you know, live a normal life after that. You know what I'm saying?
I want you to know, Nestor and Mike, that if either of you guys ever confide in me that you killed someone, I'll be forced to notify the authorities.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. I would hope so. But if I killed somebody, the last thing I would do is tell anybody.
I would say the last thing I would do is tell you, Sal.
No, I wouldn't tell anybody. I mean, that's fucking stupid.
I mean, like, if you told me you killed somebody, like, 5 years from now, I'd be like, I would, like, be with a new friend. I'd be like, hey, you know what Nestor told me? Don't tell anybody.
No, but you would.
Five years ago, Nestor told me that he killed somebody.
Right, you would want to tell other people to stay away from me. But I'm just saying, it's like, you know. But anyway, that's more disturbing shit. Body parts keep showing up at water treatment plants. Okay, as if fucking Los Angeles water doesn't smell and taste like fucking shit, like dead rats.
You know why? Because we already have toilet to tap happening in Los Angeles.
Yeah, without any fucking purification.
Yeah, but this is what gets me is people have been drinking this water, and they come down and says the water tastes
who?
Funny.
I don't drink the water here.
No, I'm talking about
all these people.
Yeah, at the hotel.
Okay, no, we're not doing the hotel yet. We're doing the water plant.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I drink the water in Los Angeles. I use a Brita filter, and that filters out any skin and nails and you know, veins and muscles.
Yeah, I don't fuck with that shit, man. Water in L.A. First of all, it's shit to tap, and what they do, you know, Los Angeles' version of purification is douse the water with chlorine. That's what they do. So your water is heavily chlorinated, and it's fucking nasty, and it's hard as shit. You get water stains on anything. You know what I mean?
And what do you, now you prefer not only bottled water, but you kind of make your own water.
Yes, I do, sir.
You make your own carbonated beverages.
Yes, I do, sir. I do that. I love carbonated water, a.k.a. seltzer, a.k.a. club soda. And what happens in L.A., which is another crazy-ass phenomenon, whereas in New York, where predominant, you know, anywhere you go in New York, seltzer is a Jewish thing, having seltzer or club soda. So in New York, there's so much. I don't understand when I came out here. It's like there's a lot of Jews out here in L.A. Why can't I get a fucking club soda or a seltzer water at a fucking 7-Eleven? In New York, bro, the bodegas have fucking seltzer water. You go to a fucking crack spot in Brooklyn, they'll have seltzer water or club soda. You know what I mean? So,
are you saying that seltzer is a Yiddish word?
No, I'm saying
That's what I'm going to say.
No, it
could be is because Jews don't shop at Kmart.
No,
or
I'm
7-Eleven.
Well, maybe that's, but not even at Kmart you can find seltzer. Or I was almost 7-Eleven. Yeah. But anyway, the point you asked me, I just went all the way around and just to say this, I would go to the local supermarket to get seltzer or club soda, and they were always out or they didn't have it. And whenever I found some, I'd be compelled to buy, you know, cases of it, right? So eventually, I bought myself one of those soda streams. Well, I received one from Rosemary. She got me a soda stream. So I'm able to make water into club soda. I just went like all over the place. But I did want to make the point that I found it odd that in Los Angeles, you can't get fucking club soda.
Tired of drinking regular boring water? You need Soda Stream. That's right. Get rid of the shit from your LA tap water right now. SodaStream.com.
Skip the shit to the tap. That was good, Sal. In a Dexter-like twist, more human remains have been found at a water treatment plant, making the third time body parts have been found in the last week. The remains were discovered at the plant in Carson, where body parts were found Saturday. Now, Carson is south of Los Angeles, yeah?
Yes.
Like not far from Los Angeles? Or southeast of LAX, I meant. Right, southeast of LAX, yeah?
Right.
Do you know your geography?
I don't really know where Carson is. Okay. No. I'm thinking of Colton. I don't know where Carson
is. Colton is east. Colton is Riverside.
Colton is in the Inland Empire. Yeah, I don't know where Carson is.
I think it's southeast from LAX. It's hoodie. Yeah. You know, it's hoodie. I was just kind of curious. That's crazy. The third time this week. The coroner's office told City News Service an investigator was sent to the scene on a follow-up investigation. He wouldn't say whether additional remains have been found. The discovery comes days after a woman's pelvis was found at the same location and a torso was found at another plant 20 miles away. Authorities found a woman's upper torso at the San Jose Water Reclamation Plant north of Whittier on Monday. That's a completely different town. The torso was believed to match a pelvis and set of legs found on October 26th at the Carson plant, the Joint Water Pollution Control Plant. It's unbelievable.
You know, let me tell you guys.
Hold on. The third set of human remains apparently belongs to the same woman. The L.A. County Sheriff's Office told the L.A. Times. Homicide investigators were treating all remains as one case. Third body part found at a water treatment plant Thursday morning has been identified as an arm. This is fucked up, dude.
So were they playing Scrabble with this body?
Well, they're basically cutting it up and putting it in different places, thinking that it's going to decompose naturally in the water.
No, I'm talking about the authorities. Were they playing Scrabble as the parts were coming along? They were trying to just fit them in.
Well, they're treating treating it as one case because since the body parts belong to the same person, supposedly. Anyway, the whole thing is fucked up, man. It's crazy. But this is not unique. This is a thing in L.A. I mean, not too long ago, there was a woman's body found not too far from the Skid Row studios. A woman's body at the Cecil Hotel. This young Asian chick, I think she was like 20-something years old. She, 21 years old, from Vancouver, Canada.
Is there a picture of her?
There is a picture of her.
Because Mike would like to see a picture of her.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That's funny. So basically, she was at the Cecil Hotel, which is not far from here. It's, what is it, 5th Street and what?
7th and Main.
7th and Main, so right down the block. And it's a fucking trip, man. It's like right across the street from Jeremy's house. You can see it. But the hotel's a fucking trip. Anyway.
You're telling me that Jeremy lives across the street from the Cecil Hotel?
Yeah.
Where Richard Ramirez used to live?
Yeah. But he didn't live there when Richard Ramirez was, you know, stabbing hoes and shit.
Wow.
Yeah. But that's only a little bit of part of what used to live at the Cecil Hotel. So basically, this her name was Elisa Lamb. May she rest in peace. God rest her soul.
That's her name?
Elisa. Yeah. E-L-I-S-A Lamb. Rest in peace. I remember seeing this in the news, in Yahoo News or something like that. And there was an actual fucking video, and there is a video. It's morbid, right? Because there's a video. Yeah. They'll say unidentified woman found in the water tower at Cecil Hotel. Patrons complained about low water pressure and really foul-tasting water. Yeah, that was the complaint. Then they find his fucking body. In the water tower. Then they're like, oh shit, what happened? Did they murder her? Did they drug her? Did they rape her? Blah, blah. No one knows, right? Until they do an autopsy.
I think there was even speculation that she might have just fallen in.
Well, that's what happened. Right. That's what happened. It was an accident. It was ruled as an accident.
So mm-hmm. she just climbed up there on top of the
well,
water.
Well, before any of this was discovered, there's this video. And the girl is acting really erratic. She jumps into this elevator, pushes all the buttons, and she's obviously somebody from security from the Cecil released this fucking video and it went viral. It's on YouTube. So she's frantic, she's pushing all the buttons and she's hiding to the side of the door. And the door doesn't close, and she runs off, and that's the last you see of her. So apparently what they came up with was that she was bipolar, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, there have been updates on this whole thing. The most recent one was that her parents were suing the Cecil Hotel, and all of the patrons of the Cecil Hotel that were staying there were suing the Cecil Hotel.
Damn, Cecil's in big trouble.
Well, the Cecil Hotel, man. The Cecil Hotel also is primarily it's half SRO, right? It's single room occupancies for people on low income, right?
Yeah, the lower floors are the low income floors, but then it's mostly like European tourists in the upper floors,
like $95 a night and shit like that. Wow.
Well, it's named after Cecil B. DeMille, the former movie director.
Is it really named after him?
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. You're bullshitting, man.
Sounds good.
It sounded good, but it's not. But
I guess
but,
a little more. One thing I've really admired about Jeremy is how he has this. He really romanticizes Los Angeles. Like, I grew up here in Los Angeles, and when I come to downtown, I'm thinking like, why would anybody really want to live here? And Jeremy loves living in downtown Los Angeles amongst the literal Skid Row.
This is where it all started, man. This is where the history's at.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I love about him.
You should be living next to Olvera Street then.
No. Well, yeah. No, but that's
next
what
to the first house in Los Angeles.
Yeah, the first urban development.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that's what I love about downtown and Jeremy. And it's, you know, there's some people who live down here, and there's a lot of people who live down here, because I remember when I first came to Los Angeles, you know, and I don't think it still has caught on, but, you know, there was this whole thing of buying lofts and living down here in lofts, all these, like, hipsters, you know, moving down here. And, you know, being from New York, the last thing I want to do is fucking be near hipsters, you know what I mean? And you live in this pretty fancy building, And a lot of the people who live in that building seem to be kind of hippish, yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
They're all like hipsters. But you're like the last thing from that. You're like, fuck it, I'm not into all that.
Well, it was strange because my first time in downtown Los Angeles, I had come from New York City. You know, you're from New York City. You come to downtown LA after being in New York City and you think, what the fuck is this? You know, this is fucking, what is this? It's a joke, you know?
The trip, though.
Yeah. It's not a downtown, comparatively speaking.
Well, no. Well, generally, downtowns of any major metropolis are seedy and you know, dark, gray, gritty. They just are because the life is there during the day, during business hours, you know? Corporations run the buildings. After 5, it's empty. There's nothing to eat. There's no places to live.
And that's what downtown was.
Right.
You know, I came here 14 years ago, and it was a ghost town after 5 p.m.
Right.
Nothing on the streets.
Right, except Skid Row. Fifth Street has always been fucked up.
Yeah, and Skid Row would go as far west as Broadway, pretty much. And now, you know, it's been pushed east. So it's changing, it's evolving, but yeah, there's a lot of hipsters. I want there to be the diversity in downtown Los Angeles that there is in like New York City.
Right.
You have an old Jewish couple right next to some young hipsters.
Right.
You don't really get that sort of thing down here.
Jewish couples are usually wiser than that. They live up in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
They're like, fuck that. I'm not fucking hanging out in fucking Skid Row. Yeah. No, thank you. So, but I did a little bit more research on the Hotel Cecil, and the Hotel Cecil does have a creepy past. So the Cecil Hotel's dark past earned it a spot on Los Angeles tours long before a woman's body was found inside its rooftop water tank. It's the place where serial killers stay, as Sal was just saying, said tour guide Richard Chave. Chave and his wife, Kim Cooper, conduct a true crime and oddities tour. They call Hotel Horrors and Main Street Vice. Cooper and Chave have made it their job to compile details.
Cooper and Chave have made it their job.
The law firm of Cooper and Chave wants you to know that if you've been anally assaulted, you can call us.
Cooper and Chave have made it their job to compile details on those who have killed or been killed while staying at the Cecil. The most famous on their list are serial killers Richard Ramirez, as Sal mentioned earlier, and Jack Unterweger.
Ramirez was of Mexican descent.
Richard Ramirez was the Night Stalker.
Yes.
He was probably one of two Latino serial killers ever in the history of the United States of America.
And it was also one of those perfect examples of how the crime sketch, how the sketch looks nothing like the person they find
them. Right. He was just mentally deranged. I mean, he was just
He was a devil worshiper.
And
believed that he was killing people in the name of Satan.
Right. He dressed all in black.
And not the fun Satan that we dress up as for Halloween.
No, he was just...
The evil Satan.
He was just fucked up out of his mind is basically what it was. One of the other things that I remember reading about was that... that cutlery place over here on Broadway. Do you know the name of the place over there, Jeremy? Where they sell scissors, knives, and shit like that. I think it's called. It's not called Broadway Cutlery. But
Killers Are Us.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. It's right across the street from Grand Central Market.
Right. And it used to be somewhere else, and then they moved. They got pushed out. So apparently he bought his last knife there. I have a book about serial killers. I'm actually fascinated with serial killers. And Richard Ramirez, how he got caught in East LA saw him in the news, and I forgot what he was doing. I think he was breaking into somebody's car or something like that.
I think he was trying to break into a house, I think.
A house or a car?
I thought he had gone to a market. I thought he was or a store, and he was leaving the store.
Well, you're saying it was something mundane. I thought he actually got caught
No. He tried to break into something.
Right,
and somebody recognized his face, and they chased him, and they beat the fuck out of him.
Yeah, the neighborhood.
La Raza! Yeah. Hit him! Punch him in his face, eh?
That is the Night Stalker!
Puto! Punch him in his face, eh?
Richard Ramirez! It is the Night Stalker! I'm going to kick his ass!
You motherfucker! You think you could just fuck our girls? Puto!
Big ups to those that killed the Night Stalker! Oh, no, they didn't kill him.
They fucked him up.
They fucked him up. He's on death row now, I believe.
He's on death row.
He's dead.
No.
What?
He's dead.
He died?
No. Yeah, what? he died.
When?
How old is this article?
No.
No, he did.
No.
Google him. He's dead.
Google him.
Richard Ramirez is dead.
You're thinking about somebody else.
No, he died, and he died in death row.
No. No way.
Look it up.
I'm going to look it up.
Look it up.
I want to look it up.
I think I would remember that, because you know what? He had Los Angeles.
Yeah, he died in June.
Siege.
He's right.
What?
He's right.
So Richard Ramirez is dead?
Yes.
All right, a moment of silence.
Yes, he died.
I didn't know that. Why didn't I know that?
Huh?
What do you feel sad
about? Did you guys know that? Did you know that 3 months ago?
I wanted to interview him.
You knew that.
He did. He died June 17th, June 7th.
How'd he die?
He died of natural causes.
He probably died of being stuffed in his fucking neck with a lot of cocks or something in the prison. He was in Greenbrae, California.
I think, you know who I think killed him?
He got
Satan.
Sick. Yeah, he got sick and just died.
Richard, I'm here to collect on what is owed to me, your eternal soul. You cocksucker.
The Cecil filled then with hundreds of transients living in the cheap rooms was a good place for Ramirez to go unnoticed as he killed 13 women, Shav said. Shav said.
Women's?
Women's.
Yeah, women's.
Yes, women's. Mm. He was just dumping his bloody clothes in the dumpster at the end of his evening and then going back in the back entrance. Jack Unterweger worked as a journalist.
Wagger. Jack Unterweger. So he wags under.
Worked as a journalist. This is the last time we're having a black guy on my show.
Well, I'm trying to.
I'm just telling you. I'm just
telling you. What kind of name is that? Jack Unterweger. What the hell is Jack Wagon under what?
Worked as a journalist covering Los Angeles crime for an Austrian magazine in 1991.
When Can you see his boss Cecil. Calling him?
When he moved into the Cecil. We believed he was living at the Cecil in homage to Ramirez, Shav said. So this guy was fucking paying tribute to fucking unbelievable.
Well, I know a comedian that lives in Steve Martin's old apartment.
Where's that?
I think after Steve Martin moved out, Dane Cook moved in. Then after Dane Cook moved out, another guy moved in.
Where's this?
I think somewhere like off Melrose or something. Mm.
Steve Martin, Dane Cook, and then some other.
Jack Unterweger.
All right. Okay, during the 1950s and 60s, the Cecil had a reputation as a place where people would kill themselves by jumping out upper floor windows, Cooper said. It's just what people do when they are at the end of their rope, she said. Helen Gurney, in her 50s, leaped from a seventh floor window, landing on the Cecil Hotel marquee on October 22nd, 1954. Julia Moore jumped from her eighth floor room window on February 11, 1962, she said. Moore left behind a bus ticket from St. Louis, 59 cents, and an Illinois bank account book showing a balance of $1,800. Pauline Otten, 27, jumped from a ninth floor window after an argument with her estranged husband on October 12, 1962. Cooper said Otten landed on George Giannini, 65, who was walking on the sidewalk 90 feet below. Both were killed instantly.
So she committed suicide and killed somebody by doing it?
She committed suicide and homicide at the same time.
The story is that after a argument with her husband, she jumped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. It's called the husband pushed her. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Not everyone on Cooper's list committed suicide. Pigeon Goldie Osgood, a retired telephone operator, was found dead in her ransacked room on June 4th, 1964.
Trust me, that's a sister.
Cooper said...
Jumping off a building is some white people shit.
No. Pigeon, that's a sister.
Cooper said Osgood, known for protecting and feeding the pigeons at nearby Pershing Square, was stabbed, strangled, and raped. The crime has not been solved. Not an ordinary hotel. Shav and Cooper have theories about why the Cecil's past has been so torrid. It was built in the 1920s as a hotel for businessmen to come into town and spend a night or two, Cooper said. But it was soon upstaged by nicer hotels in a better part of town. When the Great Depression hit the 1930s, it became more of a transient hotel. Mm. Eventually, it transitioned into a single-room occupancy business known as an SRO. Long-term tenants rented individual rooms and shared bathrooms with neighboring tenants. This was just a place where people who were really down on their luck were going.
But when did the hipsters come?
I've stayed in the Cecil.
And it's not that bad.
I mean, it's not...
It smells like fecal matter and dead bodies.
It's not nice, but it'll get you through the night.
Is it haunted?
I didn't know any of those stories back then, but I did know about Richard Ramirez.
Yeah, everybody knows.
Because I used to hang out at Krabby Joe's next door, the bar, and there was rumors of Ramirez used to hang out in that bar and then go back to the Cecil.
Right.
Now, wait a second. Are there people now living in the room that Richard Ramirez lived in?
Sure.
I'm sure.
Wow.
Sure.
But that's like...
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
I wouldn't want to spend the night in that room.
Well, how many times... I mean, I read a few articles.
But that's like the YMCA.
Let me finish this, and then we'll wrap up the macabre fucking sentiments of hotels and apartments and houses and who's died where and what. Because people die. People get murdered. People get raped. People get strangled. People commit suicide. Somebody, it happened in your apartment, the one you lived in now. It may have happened in the house that I live in now. You don't know.
I think it's going to happen in my apartment.
Well, it's going to happen, sure. During the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, hundreds of people who were down on their luck called the Cecil home. They were all hustling to make ends meet. It's not like that anymore, of course. New owners converted three of the floors back to hotel rooms around 2007, but most of the building remains SRO. Another section serves as a hostel that is marked toward European tourists, he said. It was not clear if Lamb was staying in one of the hotel rooms, which offer more privacy, or the hostel. It's almost impossible to know, because I was reading another article related to this type of thing about like how to find out where not to stay. In other words, you know what I mean? Like if the hotel has a fucked up website, or there's signs of shitty hotels. I mean, how many times have you're a comedian, you travel across town, you stay in a motel, you don't fucking know. You know, have you ever had a friend of yours get murdered or commit suicide in somewhere?
Well, it's like a restaurant. If you're driving out of town and you come upon a restaurant and there ain't nobody in it, don't eat there.
Right.
So it's the same as a motel. If you're driving and you don't see no cars in the parking lot, don't stay there.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you guys. I've stayed in some real dumps. I've also had the pleasure of staying in some 5-star hotels. And I'll tell you guys this. They're all full of sperm, blood, saliva.
Sure. That's true.
Woman's cream. I mean,
sure.
All over the place. They're all filthy. Don't touch anything.
But you're more apt to not... slip on somebody's goo in a 5-star hotel than you are in a fucking in a Motel 6.
True, but I tell you what, when I stay at a Motel 6, every time I'm staying at a Motel 6, I think to myself, right now, one of my fellow neighbors probably has some weed. So that's the good part.
Right.
Otherwise, no, don't go there.
Listen, if the soap is thinner than your credit card, don't stay there, okay? If the toothbrush that they give you, you can scrub the fucking shit off the bottom of your shoe and the bristles still are intact, don't stay there. Anyway, there's a lot of places that you just don't know if people were murdered or if somebody committed suicide or what's gone on. You just don't know.
Sure.
Who's jumped out of a window? Yeah. You know what I mean?
I used to work at a gym, and the seventh floor, a woman jumped off the roof, which was the seventh floor. We were actually there that day. We were in the gym that day working out, and we literally saw the woman fly down the building. We all ran outside, and she had plunged to her death. Now, seven stories is high enough to kill you, but not high enough to, you know, just splatter you.
Right.
So she looked very lovely there as she lay there dead,
right,
as blood trickled out of the back of her head.
Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I've seen that image before.
Yeah. So if you ever want to kill yourself, do seven floors. That way you'll still kind of be pretty, but you will be
just
dead.
Just kind of listless. Well, no, when you...
So in other words, if you do 5 floors...
You'll be a paraplegic. That's what will happen.
No. When you lift her up, her face is fucked up, so she's not going to look that pretty. So you're only looking at her from the top.
Yeah, well, we were looking at her from facing us, because the back of her head was on the concrete.
But if she hit her face down, it would have been a wrap. Anyway, I read another article that right around the time that Elisa Lamb was found in the water tank of the Cecil Hotel, there was a tuberculosis outbreak in downtown L.A. amongst Skid Row, transients.
I remember about that. You know what? I think I was here at that time talking about that. Yeah, I think I wore my Asian flu mask.
Did you?
As I walked down 7th.
When you were doing your show here?
Yeah. When I walked down 7th and Olive, I wore my Asian flu mask.
Well, what's interesting is that the name of a tuberculosis test is also called Elisa Lamb.
What?
Yeah, Google it.
No kidding.
No, you've already taken away our electronic devices.
I'm telling you, I could.
We're on restriction.
You've confiscated my phone. It's under your teacher's desk.
And you took my.
No. I couldn't believe it. I fucking rapid direct antigen test for tuberculosis. Oh, it's called Lamb Elisa, not Elisa Lamb. It's called Lamb Elisa.
This portion of Nextorious Public Radio is brought to you by Elisa Lamb Tuberculosis Test. That's right. Are you tired of coughing up blood from your lungs? Make sure you get tested today.
No, it's Lamb Elisa, and she was Elisa Lamb. Anyway, you know what? We're coming really close to the end of our show. So I just want to say happy Halloween to everybody. You know,
in closing, we wish you a safe and healthy Halloween season.
Well, I mean, I thought we'd talk about, you know, deaths and the morbid shit that people do. I mean, we have more stories and stuff like that. But you know, I think that we've covered enough. I think ending on the Cecil Hotel is, you know, appropriate, being that we're in Skid Row, in Skid Row Studios and in downtown LA.
Are you wrapping up the show?
I'm going to wrap up the show, yeah.
Give me a second to plug something if you can.
Oh, yeah, you can plug something. I wasn't going to end up the show without asking you if you wanted to plug something.
Well, I've been on shows where people are like, good night. And I'm like, well, can I plug my shit? And
please, plug your shit. Yeah.
Okay. I would like to invite everyone to join me at Kamikaze this weekend. This coming Saturday at 9 a.m., I will be the host and moderator of the Dark Prophet panel. We're going to be talking about this new web series. We're going to be talking about this new video game franchise, this new comic book called Dark Prophet, Kamikaze, LA Convention Center, 9 a.m. Sal Rodriguez, host, moderator. Be there. I know it's early, but you geeks can do it.
What are you doing? Is this like a Comic-Con type thing?
Kamikaze is the LA answer to Comic-Con, and it is started by Stan Lee, Mr. Marvel himself.
Oh, yeah. All right. And you're doing hosting gig.
Yeah, I'm going to be hosting and moderating a panel for a new upcoming license called Dark Prophet.
Got it.
So be sure to be there.
Got it. You do a lot of that. You do a lot of hosting and...
I'm hosty. Yeah. I'm hosty.
Yeah.
And toast.
Yeah, and you, what are you doing, Mike?
Nothing.
You coming over to my house, hanging out and shit?
Yeah, I'm just a retired.
You're retired.
Man.
You're a retired motherfucker.
Yeah.
Wait, do you get a pension and all that?
Yeah.
It's fucking awesome.
Well, Mike used to work
for
the...
I want a pension. I don't want to do shit.
Mike used to work for the Glendale Department of Power.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many years?
Yeah, them white folks ain't got good sense.
Wow.
So 31 years.
31 years and you got a pension?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
He's living large.
That's awesome. I'm so, you know what? My mom tries to give me applications to the state. She's like, here's an application for the state office. I'm like, yeah, mom, I don't want to see that. You know what? I just hit 40. I'm about to start turning in some applications.
You just hit 40?
Yep. I'm turning in some applications to the state, to the federal office. I want to be a city employee. I want a pension. I want benefits. I want security in my senior years.
With that said...
Big the fuck up
to all you people who have a job. Big the fuck up to all you people to aspire to do something with your life and not throw other people off of cliffs. Big up to all you motherfuckers that don't drink the shitty water and have your own purification system at home. Big up to all you motherfuckers that punch each other out on Halloween and hit each other with socks like we used to when we were kids. Socks filled with flour and throw eggs at each other. Big up for motherfuckers that keep shit raw. This is Nestorius, and you're listening to Nestorius Public Radio for the last, I don't know how long. Make sure you follow us on Twitter. You hit us up on Facebook and go to iTunes, man, and subscribe. Tell two people. Let them tell two more people. You know what I'm saying? We out. Set it off, get it off, let it off. Set it off, get it off, let it off. Set it off, get it off, let it off. Set it off, get it off, let it off. Ooh-wee, it's me. Ooh-wee, it's me. Ooh-wee, it's me. Ooh-wee, it's me. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know.